started, I want to actually recognize my colleague, Dr. Kim Downer. Kim, you want to stand up? She has been my partner in crime, if you will, for this evaluation, and so we've both been doing this work. I will have to leave pretty much right at 2 o'clock, so she, if you have any questions that, if you have any more detailed questions, she'll be happy to help you. She'll be able to stay. I'll be talking about a systems change initiative in South Carolina. So actually in 2000, South Carolina started with the appointment of a task force by the governor to kind of look at how South Carolina has been complying with the Olmstead Supreme Court decision, has been starting its systems change efforts. And then in 2001, when President Bush launched his New Freedom Initiative, the state's really been starting to apply for grants through that initiative and has been successful in securing those. The work that we're talking about, that we've been doing, refers directly to the Systems Transformation Grant, which was sort of the most recent grant that South Carolina has been able to secure. Here are the three goals. South Carolina stipulated the three goals. Under that grant, states were required to apply for develop at least three out of six goals, and those six goals were pretty much spelt out. And here are the three, two, and then here's the third one that South Carolina chose to address. We pretty much knew from the beginning that a project that extensive, that complex, where you now try to change a long-term care system of an entire state, would require bringing together a number of different stakeholders, stakeholders of agencies and entities that traditionally haven't necessarily been working together, that actually, although they to some extent actually serve the same target population, to some extent consider their mission unique, individual to their own agency, and to some extent vie for the same funding. So now they were asked to come together basically into the same sandbox and play together. And so we knew from the beginning that we wanted to look at indicators of the system's change that weren't readily visible, that perhaps people weren't actually comfortable talking about things like, and we heard mumblings about that from the very beginning of this project, things like, are you going to tell us to create a new mega agency? Are you going to do away with our agency? Are we going to become obsolete? And people weren't necessarily comfortable sharing that when they all came around a table where everybody, expressed their belief in this project, and everybody did believe in this project. So this was stuff that was sort of under the surface, and to us, this was kind of the unmeasurable part. We wanted to really find ways to measure things that made sense, not something that seemed arbitrary. That's where that cartoon strip comes in. So there were three main areas that we wanted to look at. One was collaboration, beyond sort of the measurable. The first speaker talked about sort of the need to balance what we can measure accurately and what really shows true change, or in your case it was community health. You know, it's not always the same thing, what we can measure and what really shows what change means in our case. So this idea that people collaborated, this idea that people felt committed to the project and saw others committed to the project, this idea that they formed partnerships beyond sort of what was required of them, sort of this, as I was saying, coming together and playing ball together. Also this idea that true change had occurred. What was that? What does true change in a long-term care system actually mean? Where are we now? Where do we want to be? It was part of that. What is that idea of a true change? And then this idea that consumers of that system actually liked that system. So yes, certainly satisfaction, but beyond that, access, not only to the extent that there was more access, but there was perhaps better access, which isn't necessarily the same thing. That system was there for you, was there for them, readily visible, that they didn't have to chase after it, and the degree to which they actually trusted that system. So there were these three areas. Let me talk about collaboration first. For all three areas, we decided to go quantitative and qualitative, which kind of allows us to get at things nicely. We developed a collaborative process checklist, which we were going to do every 6 months. We put it online. It had, I want to say, 15 items on it, and it kind of tapped into this idea how people felt committed to the project, how they felt everybody collaborated together, how they felt their efforts were being appreciated by others, how the degree to which they felt that their own agency kind of frowned upon them being part of that project, those sorts of things. Okay. Okay. We also did a partnership map. That was the qualitative part of it. It was quantitative as well. Let me show you examples. Here's the partnership map. So people really, we broke this down into actual partners and into wish partners. Actual partners being those entities and agencies with which the stakeholders already partnered up with, and then those wish partners who they believe they should be partnering with or they would have liked to partner with in the future. And we rated those on value, strength, extent, and satisfaction. So value, how do you value that partnership? I mean, some partnerships are valued very highly, others maybe not so much. Maybe they're just because somebody else expects them to partner. Strength and extent really tied into at what level that partnership resided. Was it something informally, where two caseworkers or frontline workers just kind of talked? Was it all the way up the chain of command? Was there actually a memorandum of agreement or a memorandum of understanding in place for that? And satisfaction, how satisfied were the stakeholders with it? Here's the collaborative process checklist. You see some items on here. I know this is a little small. I just wanted to give you an idea of what these looked like. Okay. We also did stakeholder interviews, so this was the qualitative portion. We audio taped those, and we were doing these annually, so we've done a round, we're getting ready to do a second round, and we also were doing consumer focus groups that kind of tied into this whole collaboration process, because the reasoning is that if these agencies and entities truly collaborate with each other, the consumers ultimately will get a sense of that. Here are the interviews for the stakeholder interviews. These are some of those questions. And they were kind of tying into, in your mind, what is this project about? I mean, there was this overall vision and mission for the project, but was that really something that people in their own heads bought into? How did they see their role in the project? Why did they think they were asked to be part of that project? What did they think about that? Those sorts of questions. For the stakeholder interviews, here's what we found. We audio taped those. They lasted on average about 75 minutes, and there were five themes that kind of came out of that. The first one was that everybody seems to get that vision that everybody developed. Incidentally, we had a strategic planning retreat at the beginning of the project where everybody came together, and part of that was spent on hammering out an overall vision and mission for that project. And it seemed like everybody got that. However, you see sort of that yellow bullet, there was really disagreement, and there still is disagreement amongst individuals what a transformed system looks like. Now, you can easily see that that might be a problem, right? Because if you have this overall vision, but then people individually really have a disagreement about what that vision really is and what it should look like, then at least to some extent, you will get people, if we are trying to work towards goals, people might not be fully behind it or may passive-aggressively counteract that. We're getting some of that. Theme two, if we want others to get the vision, we need to tell them. I mean, there was this agreement among people that just because we think this is a great thing doesn't necessarily mean other people think it's a great thing, nor do they probably know we're doing this. I mean, again, there's other agencies still out there, not part of the long-term care system, that at least indirectly influence what happens with long-term care in the state, and so we need to let them know what we're doing. Theme three, the legislature needs to get the vision as well, and particularly that second bullet, S equals LB squared means systems change equals legislation and budgeting. Not just one or the other. So we don't need mandates if they're unfunded. We need true funding to back up some of these mandates. Just because we think it's a good thing, if we don't really make dollars available for it, it's only going to go so far. Then people talked about some of the things that they thought could derail the vision, and they were really, this was just sort of a checklist of things, and money was a big one, politics and turf were some others, and then that we need to really keep doing what we're doing. We need to really actually kind of stop talking. There was a long period where everybody got together and talked things out, and it was great brainstorming, which was good, but we definitely got to a point where people said, enough of that. We now need to really, really just do things, you know, just do it. Let's get started so that we can see some quick successes. Right. Here's the collaborative checklist. We did, so up to this point, we've done three administrations, one baseline and two follow-ups. And what you can see here, this is the important stuff. To some extent, what we're getting at is some of the things that we don't see. So we don't see a lot of participation. We had two, because we had an advisory committee for the project, and we had five work groups for the project. And the reasoning was some of the same people were on one or the other or both, or three of them actually, and you could feel that one of the groups that you're on collaborates quite well, while perhaps the other two don't, and we wanted to capture that. That's why we broke it that way. But look at the participation numbers. I mean, look at how many people were invited to participate and how many actually did. And what happened from baseline to follow-up too, numbers are dropping. And that's indicative of something. And when you see what the scores were, you can tell what it's indicative of. That people also, when they came around the table and talked to each other and shared how great this was, in terms of the collaborative effort, that didn't quite pan out. One means strongly disagree, two disagree. So you see the average scores. And the questions, here's an example of the questions. The advisory committee members contribute equally to the collaborative effort. But people disagreed on that. They did not feel that, and we know from the qualitative interviews actually that people had definitive opinions who they thought collaborated well and who was just there to kind of show their face but didn't really do anything for the project. And you see there is slight change, but it's not statistically significant. And the same is true for the work groups, same thing. Actually, the score went down slightly and it's then gone up a little bit, but it's still, people still disagree with it. You know, they don't think collaboration is very strong. Now, that second part, systems change, we had several measures for that. We developed what we call a systems outcomes checklist, and what we did here, we basically took the goals and then the objectives spelled out under each goal and developed that checklist. They follow very, very specifically those objectives. Quantitative, again, online, people could go online, we do it pre-post. Let me show an example here. Consumers know about available resources and service options for long-term care supports. It's not in, doesn't occur right now, occurs rarely, sometimes, or is actually in place now. So what we really wanted to show there was sort of this change from what is now as opposed to what is going to happen a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now. The project, we are about halfway through now, it's a 5-year project. All right. So, and then we had the services integration mapping, which I don't have any results for. We just did that. It was very qualitative, very in-depth, very free and flowing. We actually went to each of the sites and talked with people about their organizational chart, the way they've done intakes, and basically what happens from the moment a call comes into the agency or a consumer comes to the agency all the way until that case is resolved. And what changes do you expect to occur as part of this process in terms of integrating and streamlining? And we've done the first round. We still have all the raw data, which is all the text and the words that people gave us, and we have to mull through all that, and then we'll do it again, and hopefully there'll be some change. So here's the outcome of the systems checklist, the systems outcomes checklist, the initial baseline administration, and you see sort of on average 2, which means things occur rarely, things are really not very institutionalized, they're not presently in place. The only time where this goes up is, for instance, item number 10, consumers experience difficulty in applying for Medicaid. Well, yeah, that pretty much happens regularly. No surprise there. And this was really not to say how bad the system is. This is just, this is what the system is like now. And then we'll do it again, and hopefully there'll be some change, hopefully for the better. A lot of these numbers we hope to see go up. Number 10, of course, we want to see go down. And here they are. I'm going to go through those. The third area was sort of this idea to capture what consumers think about the system. All right, we have a consumer satisfaction survey that we're mailing out. We've done consumer focus groups. All right, the satisfaction survey, you see this here. Here's sort of a sample smattering of questions. And that went out. What happens is as people contacted these agencies, within 2 weeks of them contacting the agency, we'll make a mailing to them and ask them these questions. And this is very, very busy, but really the two things I want you to take away from this is the first one up top, that we made to date about 1,000 mailings, and we've received about 200 back. So that's a very low response rate. And we have an idea of why that is. The second thing, when you look at the numbers here, actually, lower numbers mean higher satisfaction, higher numbers mean lower satisfaction. You see that these numbers are pretty good. I mean, people are very satisfied or satisfied. 1, 1.5, 2, and we're finding that all the time because people are so starved for something. It doesn't really matter what it is. When they get something, they're satisfied with it. All right. But the response rate, of course, is very, very low. All right. And that's telling us something. All right. Here's for the focus groups. We've gone to the regions, to the long-term care regions, and we've invited people to join us for these focus groups. You see again who were at, there were 327 eligible. These are again of people who contacted the ADRC, the 18 Sibley's information centers. Those who were contacted and invited to join, and those who actually consented to join, and those who actually attended. So you see there's a low rate here as well, and of course you can worry about selection bias, which you can as with all the other measures as well. Here's sort of how that broke out, and you see a lot of the participants were female. A lot of them were older, which is what we knew they would be. All right. A lot of them were African-American, and so on. And then here are the themes here. There were six themes, and they broke into these four major areas. So there were structural issues, there were provider issues, there were consumer issues, and then there were issues with the visibility and the trust that, that consumers have with that new system. Part of that new system is, as I should mention to you, is the creation of Aging and Disabilities Resource Centers, the ADRC initiative that was begun by AOA and CMS together and is now being continued by AOA. But consumers basically don't know that they exist. To them, the system is what the system is. There seems to be this other service now, which is the ADRC. But it's not sort of integrating things. It's just adding another, you know, sort of horizontally, there's a number of services, and there's yet one more number that they can call. But consumers don't really understand what that service or that thing called the ADRC could do for them. All right. Which, of course, is a big thing. Basically, what's come out of these focus groups is that consumers believe the system to be broken. The system is structureless. Providers are powerless to help them. And things are basically sort of just haphazard. If you get lucky and your neighbor talks to you about something, you happen to hear about it, you get lucky, you find out. But if you don't, then you don't. So there is no real rhyme or reason to the system, and there is no... There's no system to this system, basically, is what we found. All right. So now where we are with this is that there's lots of things for us really that we need to take a look at, particularly this whole collaboration issue, that people, when they come together, say, this is great, we've been waiting for this, let's do it. And then when everybody goes back to their own agency and to their own desk, then that kind of goes away. And part of that has to do with sort of the broader public, you know, state government, funding, turf issues, it has to do with that. But before we really address that, we can't really expect the system to change. And the other thing that we're finding out now that we need to probably take a look at as we go ahead with these further administrations of our tools, the time frame. I mean, 5 years, 3 years, it took a long time just to plan this. We're now, you know, we've done implementation for about a year now. We have maybe 2 years left, and the project is over. Do we really expect the system to be able to change in that time frame? I don't believe. I mean, the data seems to suggest really not. Okay, so this is where we are at this point. Thank you very much. Those were actually consumers. So I'm assuming you're referring to the sort of key stakeholders, the agencies. Well, you know, it's interesting because we had an Aging and Disabilities Resource Center grant already prior to this grant. So there were some of these agencies and entities were already being around the table. We basically had the strategic, and when I say we, it wasn't really just us, but the Lieutenant Governor's Office, which is the State Unit on Aging, and they're contracting with us for the evaluation. They put together that strategic planning retreat and invited everybody to basically send this out. There was sort of already, in some people's and some agencies' heads, it was already in there because we were doing the ADRC grant, and they were being invited to come, and everybody pretty much came to that. I mean, that strategic planning retreat was not the problem. The problem arose later when we started to talk about not even formulating the vision and the mission and the goals, but then when it came to, okay, so this goal really actually means that you as an agency have to do this. Then people started to say, well, wait a minute, that's not what we thought. We thought this. And that's when people kind of started dropping out. They wouldn't come anymore, and, you know, and that's kind of where we are now. So getting them to come to the table, that wasn't a big problem, because conceptually this makes sense to everybody. It's just then the implementation part of it. You know, everybody has their own ideas, and to be fair, everybody has the funding environment and the political environment is what it is. They all have their own visions, their own, you know, purpose and goals as an agency. Yeah. Yes. That's right. Yeah. And we probably should point out too that to the extent that the federal, that the feds, that this came from them, to the extent that they kind of said, here it is, do it, but then didn't really put their money where their mouth was. You know, to some extent, some of these funding streams would need to be combined all the way up top. But they're not. That's right. Yeah. Or reporting requirements. You know, integrate your system, but then when you report your data, please separate them back out and report them, you know, for family caregiver and for meals on... please report them separately. People say, come on now, what are you asking us to do? You know, so...
It makes me regret that rather than what I presented, that I didn't present some work in public and building. It seems to me that what you're describing is a failure of political will and pretty much an embarrassment. I'm kind of surprised to hear with all the detail you've already got, which if I were a lieutenant governor, I would not want to collect anything further, that things are still going on in business as usual.
Funny you should say that.
Yes. And
because they own the report, of course, you know.
Yeah, and I wonder why things aren't changing. Because you've got a lot of detail in your evaluation, but you've got some very, very clear conclusions.
Yeah.
And it seems to me the conclusions are this must change dramatically. That, you know, just to begin with, training and facilitation, dealing with TERF, some of the underlying macro issues you're identifying, and you didn't really describe, you know, kind of a macro summary. All your summary was detailed, and even where things were kind of good, it was with a very low, you know, you were hinting at, well, that's because hardly anybody responded.
That's right.
I just wonder about kind of the ethics of continuing to intensively evaluate something where clearly you've already figured out that the quality's not there, and continuing to use the resources to continue to kind of take apart something as opposed to improving it.
And this is a really good point, because this whole idea of coalition building and to some extent marketing has to do with, you know, this is not something that public, that government, you know, a lot of us are social workers. That's not what our training is. That's not what we do. And so to ask people to do that and to do it well, is, unless we help them to do it or teach them or train them how to do it, is a tall order to fill. It really is. It's a really good point.
Go ahead.
By
totally agree.
Has no community ownership.
Yeah. I mean, I totally, because, I mean, we're doing, that's in our case, it's the agency. And, I mean, we're really seeing people doing good work individually and in smaller, but unless you back it up with a policy or, you know, a funding for, all the way to the legislature, it won't be systemic. Yeah, it won't be, I mean, you know. And I'm really heartened by all this because, I mean, this is, to me, the new direction here. I mean, to do this kind of work. But that's absolutely right. And to teach how to do some of this. Yeah.